This Week in Democracy. The idea that COVID escaped from the Wuhan Virology Institute has been gaining momentum. But why was it shot down a year ago? And what does this mean for the state of science and the media today? After that, internet nationalism is on the rise around the world, with authoritarian and democratic governments alike manipulating their citizens' digital spaces. Is the idea of an open, accessible internet on the retreat? Here's why you should care.
Renew Democracy Initiative.
In the early days of the coronavirus outbreak, some scientists and politicians challenged the Chinese government's official narrative that the virus had developed in a wet market in Wuhan, China. They pointed out that the city of Wuhan is hundreds of miles away from the cave systems where novel coronaviruses most commonly develop, but houses the Wuhan Virology Institute, China's highest-risk virology lab. There was never enough evidence to prove a connection, but it's suspicious enough to at least count it as a possibility. Except neither the most prominent scientists nor the biggest publications gave it any real consideration. The New York Times called it a fringe theory. The Associated Press rejected it as a myth. And the Washington Post wrote that it had been repeatedly debunked by experts. Even prestigious scientific journals like The Lancet and fact-checkers like PolitiFact dismissed it offhand. But now it's clear that even if it's unlikely, it's certainly at the very least plausible. So what happened? It seems that the biggest trouble with the lab leak theory wasn't its substance, but its supporters. Republican Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas was an early advocate for considering the lab leak theory, or more accurately, hypothesis. But he was ridiculed by the media and prominent scientists on Twitter for backing it. President Trump then offered his support for the theory, which probably threw it out of the realm of possibility for many scientists and politicos. With a history of promoting wild conspiracy theories,
to disappear one day, it's like a miracle, it will disappear.
The 45th president is hardly a reliable source. But how could scientists and journalists alike abandon their professional standards simply because they took personal issue with the messenger? It seems that bias may have killed the lab leak theory prematurely, and it took more than a year for it to return to the mainstream. Groupthink is clearly a problem that can infect experts as well as anyone, with resistance to the former president unifying voices where debate should have been taking place. The idea of a messenger can sometimes serve as a valuable heuristic. If the tobacco lobby were touting health benefits of a pack-a-day smoking habit, we would rightly be skeptical. But even if we might not like a particular messenger, we should still consider an idea on its merits, rather than dismissing it out of hand, particularly if it pertains to a life-altering global pandemic. Returning to our other topic this week, what is happening to the internet? In May, the Kremlin placed content restrictions on Facebook, Twitter, and Google. Meanwhile, in Modi's India, social media executives are now subject to imprisonment for refusing to remove content at the government's request, causing Twitter officials to push back. These crackdowns aren't restricted to the major geopolitical players either. Mauritius is considering an expansive law which would funnel all internet traffic through government proxy servers, effectively allowing the government to monitor everything its citizens are doing online. Most concerningly, these aren't isolated events. According to Axios reporting on a press release from Facebook, service on its platform was disrupted 84 times in 19 countries in the second half of 2020, about 50% more than in the first half of the year. Internet disruptions are on the rise, and governments are using them to control their citizens. You might be wondering, is this actually unprecedented? Well, the practice isn't new, but it's getting worse. China has been actively regulating the internet since 1997. Over the following 2.5 decades, the ever-growing Great Firewall created a distorted, alternative internet that restricts foreign platforms like Google, tightly censors speech, and enables mass surveillance on a scale unlike anything before in history. Other countries have followed their lead, with internet shutdowns increasingly common during protests and elections. In 2019, there were at least 65 shutdowns specifically related to protests. Then in 2020, the internet was shut down at least 17 times across 7 countries surrounding elections. Though not nearly so oppressive, even Western democracies are restricting internet freedom. At the moment, the Canadian government of Justin Trudeau is proposing protectionist regulations that would promote Canadian-made content over other countries on platforms like TikTok and YouTube. Similar mandates are already in place on streaming platforms in the European Union, which is finalizing a protectionist law to prevent foreign tech firms from acquiring European startups. The German government seems particularly excited about regulating the internet, making headlines this past January when Chancellor Angela Merkel criticized Twitter's ban of former President Trump, in part because in her opinion, the government should be regulating speech. Merkel's government has a record to back up her rhetoric, having passed a sweeping law in 2017 to police social media discourse, the Network Enforcement Act. That law is so expansive that it was criticized by Human Rights Watch and a United Nations working group for being overly restrictive of free speech. When the internet was young, many people believed that the battle between censorship and free speech had finally ended. In Bill Clinton's words, China's efforts to curtail internet freedom were like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall. Lately, it seems that Jell-O has finally stuck.
Renew Democracy Initiative.